Okay. Yeah, we are now going to get a brief on the mobility exit mechanism for members of the South African National Defence Force and the Employee Initiated Severance Package for Public Service Act personnel. That's the briefing. Are we ready?
Honourable Chair, we are ready. I just need to give an explanation why the Honourable Chair, Honourable Members only received the document this morning. Due to all the strikes, the minutes that was heavily occupied and...
Mr. Riale, I can at best remind Mr. Riale and not temper with the chairperson because protocol sometimes doesn't allow. Okay, Chair.
The minutes are clear of this presentation this morning, half an hour prior to this meeting. And we are ready to present it as requested by the chairperson. General Friedrich, who made the presentation on the MSDS last week, will continue now with the presentation on the exit mechanisms. He did show three slides last week. Those three slides are inclusive in this presentation. But today will be a comprehensive presentation. Follow up on the presentation which we have given to this committee in August of 2006. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, the briefing is about the mobility exit mechanism for members of the SANDF, and we call it the employer-initiated severance package for our civilian component of Public Service Act personnel. Chair, what's important that, in giving this presentation, this is a very important integral part of the Human Resource Strategy 2010, because the military grow its own timber. So it's about inflows into the military. And last week, we had a briefing on the military skill development system, which is a very important system where we bring in people into the military. But in order to grow your own timber and still keep them young, healthy and fit, you need also to release people from time to time. And this is now the exit part that I will present today. So my aim is to brief the committee members on the implementation where we stand with the MEM, called Mobility Exit Mechanisms, and EISP, the acronym for the civilian equivalent of the exit mechanism. Honourable Chair, last year in August, we briefed the committee on the MEM. I will give, therefore, only an update today in terms of where we stand and also refresh members' memory in terms of the exit mechanism. The scope is where we stand with the implementation and also a short analysis of the impact in terms of the implementation of both the MEM and the EISP. Honourable Members, the exit mechanism's legal base is found in the Government Employees Pension Fund rules, specifically Rule 40.8 and 20, as amended and approved by the National Treasury. Why National Treasury? Because they're a very key role player for the pension fund, and pension benefits is an important element for the exit mechanism. It was approved by the Minister of Defence on the 5th of July in terms of Section 55 of the Defence Act, and the intent with the MEM, who was a front runner, first approved and then the EISP followed, because it should lead to tangible right-sizing progress, where you close down, for instance, unit. It must also execute it through realistic succession planning. It's well embedded in the succession planning process. It must also guard against the exodus of expertise and certain scarce skills. A very challenging environment, because sometimes you find also people that say they leave a rich career plateau, but they're still in the scarce skills environment. It must also advise members in terms of their career progressions as informed by transformation and restructuring imperatives. And the choice to accept or to reject the offer in the MEM, as both as the EISP, is voluntary in nature. We want to achieve as far as possible things in a voluntary way. Slide number 5, Honourable Chair, is the guidelines how we apply the MEM during the succession plan. First of all, the first question that you must answer, are the functional group or mustering constrained by critical shortages? And if the question is yes, you will obviously not give a man or consider it in a very serious manner. What is the status in terms of education, training and development of the learner throughput, growing their own timber? What are the MSDs that's lined up from the bottom to grow this timber to come through the system, to take the place of these people that exit? The maintenance of expertise already referred to, and how will it contribute in the long term and medium term to right sizing? Obviously, a factor that you need to consider is the race and rank age distribution and where do we stand with that, as well as the old service system. Where do a person stand in terms of the contract which he or she serves in at that point of time? And that all form part of the succession planning. So, honourable members, you must go and ply your mind through proper succession planning. And the role of the services, the Army Chief, Air Force Chief, Navy, and SAMS, Surgeon General, personally must sign these exits and divisional chiefs and applying their minds in the succession planning process. As far as the EISPs, maybe we must just add something to it, where the service and divisional chief will sign it, the Chief of the National Defense Force will also personally sign off, you know, all those uniforms, members, and then finally signed off by the minister in person. Thank you, General. The EISP is in the public service domain, and the minister of the DPSA that made the determination in terms of the Public Service Act of 1994 to implement the EISP. The DOD also introduced it for its civilian component a little bit later. The MEM was introduced in August 2005, the EISP in May 2006. The benefit structures are basically the same, although there's certain add-on benefits for the military, but it serves in the same pension law and rules. The employees initiate their separation, also a voluntary mechanism, and when we started in May 2006, the intention was at least we expected to see 200 applicants in this regard, and you will see shortly after 1 year now where we stand with the civilian component. Madam Chairperson, honourable members, in short, what is the benefits? Let to refresh members' minds. The MEM, first of all, if I can show on this board, there's two sets of benefits which an individual receives. Is the pension benefits from the Government Employees Pension Fund. Those members with less than 10 years service and younger than age 55 will receive its actuarial interest in terms of the pension fund. That's basically what the member plus the employer paid in plus interest gain. Members more than 10 years and older than 55 has the option to take the actuarial interest or to take what they call the pension option of a gratuity and annuity. From the department side, that means such a member will receive a monthly pension in layman's language. From the departmental side, there's a set of benefits. First of all, we will pay 2 weeks for every full year of service served, but a minimum of 50,000 is payable. We will also pay all leave credit, that means camp leave, resettlement costs, all expenses if a member needs to resettle from area A to area B. Then we also give members the provision to buy into the medical continuation fund. SAMS will look after such a member up to the age of 60 and the medical continuation fund over the age of 60. And there's a small amount to be paid in to receive continuous medical. Pro rata service bonus, that's a certain check will be paid. Contractual obligation, if any, like study contract, member will be released from that. If a member has any state guarantee, the third party debts will be recovered from the exit pay, but that's a technical matter. It's basically a state guarantee for a housing loan, so you can only reevaluate your house with house prices that go up every day. If you serve in official housing allocated to you, you have 1 month's notice. If you deal in a subsidized motor vehicle scheme, to have the option to take over those team and buy the car. And also very important, to reskill people to the value of 13,000 rand through retraining, reskilling, and to give people other opportunities to prepare them for a second career. The EISP is a similar package, exactly the same benefits on the left and the right hand side. There's a little bit of change in terms of the resettlement, where the only certain expenses being covered in terms of resolution 3 of 99. The pension side, normally a military person will receive 25% add-on, while it's not applicable to a member of the civilian component. Honourable Chair, where do we stand today? In August last year when we came here, our figure was just over 1,000. I think it was 1,008 if my memory serves me correct. At the end of May, this is now the approved MEMS and EISP as approved and, as General Van Rensburg indicated, approved by the Minister of Defence. We see it in this slide for rank level from Major General down to our civilian component. I will come back to that. Breakdown per male and woman, and then a total applicants. So the total for applicants is 336. Of which we see the breakdown in terms of males and females also. The colors, we see a total of 141, which is 6%. Indians, 50, just close to 0.7%. And the bigger majority, which also tie in with our plans of to become more representative, is the white total of 1491, or 85.7%. So we see now we moved up by close to 1,000 now, 1 year later, to a total of 2,018 MEMS approved by the Minister of Defence. I want to focus now on the line indicated at 147 for the PSAP component. What is their salary breakdown? That we see on the next slide. From salary level 12, which is the equivalent of a colonel, down to the equivalent of a private, if we want to make those comparisons. And then we see again the breakdown, 11 Africans, 9 colors, 1 Asian, and 126 whites, total of 147, also in the equivalent of the military ranks. Very important factor in the succession planning is obviously to look at the rank age distribution. On the first slide here, we see the ranks, again to the left, from age 22 right through to 43 years of age. We see the breakdown, and what's interesting here is to, if the eye is, for instance, towards the end here where we see the bigger numbers, it's 38, 40 years of age, we see them, warrant officer, staff sergeant, where we find certain stagnation, as well as in certain lieutenant colonel's environment. But when we look at the next slide, 44 years up to 60 years of age, and the eye is on the warrant officers as an example, we see the bigger numbers over there. We see also the bigger numbers towards the colonels, brigadier generals, and the older age is part of building that mobility to get the throughput to grow their own timber, with the grand total again 2018. And we see the percentages at the bottom, 11.5, age bracket 58 to 59, 8%, 56 to 57, and then it tapers down. Even 52 to 53 years of age is over the 5% mark. Here is the figures per budget holder from the Army at the top right through to the Material Division at the bottom, and how it was approved per financial year. The 2005-06 financial year, as remember, we started in August 2005, start off slowly 553, then over 1,000 in the past previous financial year, 2006-07, and then in 2007-08 already approved. Some of those members already exited 453, and there are even small numbers in the year to come, also totaled in 2018. A chairperson, But that's not the only way how people leave the organization. The mobility exit mechanism deals with those stagnation patterns. But there are also members leaving the department, and that must now be tied into the feeding into the system through, for instance, the MSD system. And here we see the exit per main reason for the past financial year, 06-07 in black, and in blue, the previous financial year. Contract expiries, 500, and it moved up to over 1,000 in the past financial year. That is mainly the MSD members who finished their two-year contracts. Then deceased, 864, came down, so there's close to 180 members down, 780. Also a very other good sign is the departmental transfers that went up from 281 to 830. And this has specifically to do with our initiative with the South African Police Services, where we on a constant basis, where a member reaches career plateau, has a contract on the way to redeploy people for a second career within the police service, as well as the correctional service, but specifically the police, we were very successful in the past financial year. Discharges 319 down to 194. Medical reasons, over 100 basically stay the same, but we also find people that resign. And in terms of percentage compared to what we find in the open labor market is within parameters, 1,300 down to 1,100. And then your normal retirements, people that get full age 60 in the case of the military, 65 in the case of PSAPs, 350 to 312. 12.8% of the exits, it was memory related, EISP related for 05-06, and now 18.7% for the latter year. In conclusion, Chair, honorable members, is there's a steady result are being achieved on the stated objective in terms of representativity and our age profiles, and we saw now how the men help to specifically address the middle management challenge where we sit with specifically transformation imperatives. 42% of all exits was in the middle management colonel, lieutenant colonel, warrant officers environment. 32% of all exits, again within a middle management, male environment, which is dominated by males, white to a large extent. And 85% of all exits are white. It's difficult to forecast the exact right sizing results of the men EISP because it's voluntary of nature. But we see we stand up 2018, it definitely contributes in achieving some of our objectives. The tempo of application for both the men and EISP is determined by the success in the DOD, and also chairperson is also budget driven because there's some funds linked to the number of men that you can approve on an annual basis. It's continuous and monthly monitored in terms of its progress, and its continuous emphasis is embedded in the succession planning effort through the MEM applications to see if it makes sense when you the service chiefs in person and the chief of the defense force and the minister approves those MEM ESP applications. Chairperson, that in short is a background on the MEM and where we stand in terms of the implementation in terms of numbers. Thank you, Chair.
Yes. Honorable Chair, that is the presentation.
No, thank you very much. That is now an opportunity for members to ask, start with another Honorable Ndlovu or another Benjamin. If there are two questions, I'll be happy because it's not a new subject. Thank you. Honorable Ndlovu.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let's look at slide number 7. I just want to know benefit GEFPF. I just want to know, does this apply to NSF members? If it does apply, do they qualify from 10 years, less than 10 years, and after 10 years, how many, if possible, they qualify for that? And slide number 9, which is my last question, look at what has the exodus of people going out. are we not losing any skills when these people go out? That's the second question that I wanted to raise. Thank you.
Mr. Ntule.
On the slide, the last part, one slide. When I look at the contract expired, if I read it well, you're saying that it's coming from the MSDs. Because I'm just looking at the numbers, and the 500 side, and the 1,023. Does it mean in each year this separates? You know, yes. What happened? Or if you can just speak to it. But the other one that is also, to me, is just alarming, is the second one on the deceased. If it's age 64, is it age 64 plus 780 within this term of 2 years, or how do you read it? Because to me, it's just, these are quite big numbers. Thank you.
Let me just say that initially, I think when we were dealing with this man, we actually wanted to address the question of the aging, because aging meaning that we can't deal with a redundant defense force. And that is why we said that there should be a need for an exit strategy to make sure that as you bring in the SMPSs, then you exit. So I'm sure that this is an update. And in the last briefing, there was difficulty in saying, because this exit is voluntary. It will be very difficult to say we'll target you, but obviously the objectives as stated here are actually loud and clear. And even the issue around skills, that I think you don't want to encourage a loss of skills within the department. I don't know what criteria you use to say that, because if somebody who feels that it's about time to now, let's say, serve somewhere outside the DOD or the South African National Defense Force, what do you do in that situation? Do you say you can exit through the mechanism, or you should resign? If that answer is given, then we can be a little bit clearer. Then we can proceed answering the questions.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. The first two questions by the Honourable Mr. Nadlovu, and I'm going to ask General DeWitt, with your permission, on slide 7 and slide 9 to take the first two questions.
His name is Mr. Nadlovu. General DeWitt, you are going to make that attempt, isn't it?
For those questions on slide 7, does it apply to NSF members? All through the NSF pension dispensation, for those members who joined the South African National Defence Force, years of service are recognised through that dispensation, if a member obviously paid a 5% contribution, etc., etc. But that means if an NSF member exited with 20 or 30 years of service, including the statutory service, say we integrated in 94, plus the previous year, that such a member's benefit will be calculated, including the NSF service. So NSF service are recognized through the MEM process. So step number one is to get the recognition in terms of the NSF dispensation, and then apply the benefits in terms of the MEM as explained here.
Was a concern raised when there was a presentation by the veterans that you see, especially from the NSF forces, that you see you buy with 5%, well, on the use. There was a big appeal because that request or rule or principle which was introduced by the defense, I don't know where it come from, the treasury, it come from where. But there was a great concern raised during the joint committee on defense public hearings.
Yeah.
Yes, so if you still bring this thing on board, so you don't even say whether there's a consideration or there's no consideration.
Sir, the 5% is of any controversial issue within the NSF dispensation. It's not the making of the Department of Defense. It was all about affordability. Within the PSCBC process where a resolution was passed in terms of this, and also the role that the National Treasury played in this process in terms of funding. What it means, Chairperson, at the end of the day, that the 5% what is equated to years of service. And on average what it means to 30 years of service, say a member with 30 years of NSF service, in paying the 5% is roughly speaking equated to 4 years, 3.5 years of service. That's what a member will lose. But obviously the 5% is still a controversial matter, and that is in a process to be dealt with on in other channels. So we will see what happens with that in future. But fact of the matter, currently members will get their NSF service recognized in terms of this dispensation when they get the minimum benefits.
But if that member is exiting now, and the member doesn't have time to pay the 5%, what do you do? Do you say that you give the overall budget what is actually expected or what this member deserves in terms of the new dispensation, and from there you deduct 5%, or the condition is that you put your 5% first on the table, then you get the rest of your package.
As Honorable Chair, members, what happened in practice is that a member sits with three choices on the 5% issue and to get the extra benefit. Is to pay the 5%, in which the member will get 100% recognition for his or her NSF service. The second option is to pay those 5% in installments or as a once-off. While the member serves. And the third and last option is to say, I don't want to pay the 5% at all, in which case the member's years of service will be adapted. With plus minus, in 30 years of service, it's equal to between 4 and 3 years of service. So what it means, if a member with 30 years of service say, I don't want to pay the 5%, the member's benefit will be then calculated, say, on 27 years of service and not 30 years of service, and get the benefit still as indicated at the date of exit.
This is on the budget. We'll get back to that one. You can proceed after the other questions.
This one is slide 9.
Slide number 9.
Are we not losing skills?
Are we not losing skills? Chairperson, one of the parameters is to protect the loss of skills. The Department of Defense has a very comprehensive strategy and plan in place to identify the scarce skill environment. If you go through the annual report of last year, you will see there's a specific table where we identify the scarce skills masteries. And we go every year through such a process to identify those areas. And when a MEM application in those specifically mastering areas comes on the table, then it's considered very carefully. And only in very exceptional cases it will be improved. I did an analysis, Chairperson, of what happened between the annual report of last year and the to be published annual report, which is not yet out for consumption, but you will see them. And in all the cases of the scarce skills mastering environment, and they are airspace control, and I'm reading from the annual report of last year, the airspace control mastering environment, the air crew pilots environment, anti-aircraft, artillery, combat navy, engineers, medical professionals, all medical professionals, nursing, and all technical masterings. And now if we analyze from last year's annual report to this year's annual report, you will see an improvement in terms of the numbers in all those masterings. And that is a very good sign that in applying this map, we look at protecting the scarce skills environment, as I just mentioned.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The next questions were on slide number 14 by the Honorable Mr. Natuli, and it is to do with contract expiring and deceased for explanation purposes, General Minister.
Thank you, General.
Honorable Natuli, Mr. Madan said, I'm going to teach you.
Honorable Chair, members. Contract expiries. The majority of the expiries indicated there is directly linked into MSDS because that's the system where we apply currently the bigger numbers of contracts that expire. That means a 2-year service. But it's not only MSDS because we also have still the old service systems, the medium-term service system, where a member's contract comes to an end. And such a member say, I don't want to continue with service. And in such case, the contract will be ended. As you saw in the Reserve Force presentation this morning, the plan in the current financial year is to release 2,500 MSDS members. So the majority is definitely towards MSDS members, so it's also part. And what we must also understand, with the exception maybe of the deceased members and the medical discharge environment, all these people that exit the Defence Force through either MEM or through these reasons as indicated are potential reserve members to be utilized and recruited within the reserve system. So we must also see this as a feeder system. As far as the disease is concerned, even if we look back further into our history, you will see this number was close at over 900 at one stage, and now it's under the 800 mark. Yes, maybe an area of concern, but in terms of tendencies with the rest of the public service, in terms of percentages, it's not out of line. That's the tendency that you find within normal life.
No, I think there's some misunderstanding. I can explain the question of the Honourable Member. It is the financial year, sir. 864 in the year 05-06 and 780 in the financial year 06-07. So it's not cumulative. It was 864 in 1 year, and the following financial year it was 780.
Yeah, the figures. You want to follow up on the figures? Finished. Follow up. In the expiry of contracts, are we talking about only the MSD, or are we talking about? You see, my problem. I'm trying to link this question, expiry of contracts, with this what I was asking about NSF members. Look, I don't know which meeting where we had a problem. Because there were members who said that their contract had expired without them knowing that their contract would expire. And then they find themselves they cannot renew it and so on and so forth. And then we had that problem of pensions and money, and money is deducted and so on. My question, I wanted to know that is this expiring of contracts only apply to MSDS only, or does it apply to all members, regular, especially regular, not reserve, regular forces.
General De Witt can answer, Honorable Chair, with your permission. Chair, all MSDS members serving in a contract system, as we know, a two-year system. And they all, we only introduced the MSDS system in January 2003, so if we link it to former force, they have no affiliation to any former force. After the MSDS system, members move into the core service system, which is a contract-based system. Prior to the HR 2010 era, we had the short and medium-term service. The short-term service is basically on its last legs. There's, I think, about less than 10 people still serving in the short-term service. So the only other term service where military people serve in is the old medium-term service. Now, if a core service system member and an MTS, medium-term service member's contract come to an end, and there's no renewal of such a contract, under the current policy, such a member will receive the MEM benefits, as explained. Such members are normally through proper succession planning, and the ideal is that the member must get a proper career interview between 18 months and a year before such a contract expires, to indicate to a member the contract will be renewed, or what is your situation, do you want to exit, or will there not be a contract renewal? So it's embedded in the succession planning process, properly planned for renewal or for exit, in which case the MEM benefits will apply in terms of core service system and the old medium-term service system.
Before I lose, another follow-up question on the benefit structure. There is in slide 7, under slide 7, contractual, the state guarantee. You see, before you get released, the third party doesn't recover from exit pay. It means you cannot exit before you, if you owe a house. It means that money should be paid from your service payout, your exit payout. You owe a car, it means you should make sure, because there is what we call a state guarantee. How much does that condition alone impact on or serve as a hindrance to members who seek to exit, you know? How much does it impact on them? Because it depends again on how much exit payout you get, that you are able to do that. And what if your exit payout is actually superseded, or that is more exit, your debts are more than what you get as an exit. So as when you explain that aspect, maybe we'll be able to check on the difficulties. Are you having a follow-up question?
I've got a question, Chair. What there's discharge. Medical discharge is clear, but discharge in general, I'm not clear. I'm going to ask a clarity on a case. A member was arrested, went to jail. Whilst he was in jail, he was discharged. Came out of jail, the case was dismissed, he was cleared, but when he wanted to go back to work, he could not go back to work. How do you deal with that? And the NSF, how do you work that out? Because that member was cleared, he cannot go back to the department to continue with his work because he was discharged while he was still arrested. How do you do? Because there are a number of these cases. Hence, my concern on the legal defense, which does not talk with some of these things. How do you deal with that, with this dispensation?
Okay. referring to the fact that you get arrested, but you don't go to jail. You go through a case or hearings or the whatever court decree. Then from there you get cleared. Maybe you get cleared for a year or so. Then when you are cleared, I don't know what are the rules. You are cleared. Obviously, it's not supposed to have a consequence of losing a job. But if you happen to be sentenced, it has an automatic consequence of being discharged. So you say in an event you are arrested on allegations of anything, and you go and you get cleared. This is a question, isn't it?
Chairperson, if I can answer on the state guarantees. The state guarantee, Chairperson, is really not a big issue. The only guarantee that government currently gives to its members, the SANDFs, are a guarantee to buy a house. We don't give guarantees to buy a car or things like that. It's only to buy property, a house. Now, sometimes if you want to buy a house, you must give a deposit, say of 10 or 20%, according to, I think also now, the credit, Credit Act. Now, all that the Department of Defense as employer do in such a case is to give and guarantee to the banking institutions that they will stand in for that 10 or 20% deposit, and that it's not necessary for the member to pay it. Now, very few members, in fact, make use of state guarantees. But if you make use of such a guarantee, and it comes to the exit date, all that the financial institution wants is that he wants that guarantee back. Now, there are two ways of dealing with such a guarantee. If you bought your house 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years ago, and we know what is the rate of increase of property, you approach that financial institution and you say, come please out to my house and re-evaluate it. And currently we know that what is the price increase every year. And then you will find that you covered and you release from that guarantee. So that's the best way of dealing with it. Another way of dealing obviously with it is then to pay that guarantee in the form of a deposit and that you release. And then all that we say here, if that is an option by the member, then they will take some of his exit pay to pay the deposit over to the bank. So it's not a matter that the member will lose those money. He, in fact, sits then with a lesser bond at the end of the day. So that's, in fact, what happened there. Chairperson, Madam Chair, in terms of the discharges in general, those discharges indicate here, I don't have the exact figure with me, but I would say 95% plus of those discharges, 319 and 194 as indicated, are directly relate to, in the older days we call it AWOL, now we call it AWOP, absent without permission, or AWOL, absent without leave. The current policy in the Defence Act say, if you absent without permission 30 days, then automatically your discharge process is put into operation. So those are the cases. The approach from the department is that we won't discharge a person before such a person is found guilty. And therefore, these discharges, sometimes we suspend people. And suspension is not equal to discharge. You suspend the person to investigate the case or whatever the case might be, and then in terms of that outcome, you will do the necessary steps. So these discharges are 95% plus directly to AWOL.
We are through with the current questions, Honorable Chairperson.
I don't want us to unnecessarily prolong it. If you feel very pressed, that if you don't ask the question, the country is going to be in a serious crisis, and I'll kill you.
It depends on objectivity and subjectivity. On page
5, this line, I think the top one, I would like to know whether you are happy with the demographic picture here. It doesn't look like, unless I don't understand it, it doesn't look like there's much progress being made or has been made, unless I'm misreading it. You know, race in particular, I suppose it is combined with gender. I don't know whether you see what I'm referring to.
Honorable Chair, we must also see this slide in terms of our objective in the current defense review, which states that 76% of our population, that's the ideal, must be black, and 24% white. Now what we see here is the vice versa. We already achieved the black row representativity figure of 76%. But in certain areas, and specifically the middle management, warrant office environment, we're not there yet. And that's what we see here in terms of people who reach a career plateau in terms of the white population, in terms of 85%. That's why it's high. Also to correct those imbalances. But it's been done in a very careful way. The challenge, however, is when we look at the African environment and the lower levels, although we see there 85 privates, is that it's well known that we sit still with a challenge in our lower ranks within the SA Army in terms of certain aging and stagnation problems. But we also must be very handling in a careful way to deal with it in such a way that we don't want to contribute to unemployment, but do it in such a way, in a phased approach, worth bringing in the MSDs, interlinked with the inflow, and thus to prepare people for a second career. And that's where the concept of the works regimen in future must help us to deal with that challenge specifically.
Just how long is it going to take before the
works
regiment comes to us?
The works regiment, Honorable Chair, Madam, the study phase has been registered now for the South African Army, and General Shokwe is personally in charge. He did appoint a team. This team is taking certain research work up now, and they will be visiting a couple of countries who has got similar type of work regiments, even called in other names. We are pushing very, very hard from the top management in the department that we need this thing to roll out. In our options for funding, we couldn't give an indication as yet of the money, so it will not be in the current financial year, but hopefully that we will try our level best to give a definite progress report towards the end of the current financial year to move into the new financial year.
March. Just before the beginning of the next financial year.
No problem.
Okay, especially the conceptualization of it, more than the financial implications. We just want to understand how it will operate. Because it means from what we discussed last year, there's no movement forward. In terms of what was, because we were told about the work regiment last year. You see. So it means this way.
The MCC, our Military Command Council, has already approved the strategic concept. So the strategic concept is ready, but we will be able to report back to the committee in March regarding progress.
Let us thank the department for doing a sterling job, because I think it was out of the committee's insistence, because for about two years that we were concerned about the exit mechanism, because
we got into a tangle with the Department of Defense in trying to check why you have an aging defense force and you are not doing anything about it. So we want to congratulate the Department of Defense for doing something about it. And even in the process are taking down, we didn't have any question around the service corps, whether you've abandoned the issue around the service corps. But there was other issues which we thought when you discussed this issue, you would raise. And at the same time, we didn't expect that we wouldn't experience difficulties as a consequence of the process, because obviously the consequence would mean you lose skills. We didn't expect it to be a smooth process, but we wanted you to manage it, because there's a core objective is that you will manage or guard against the loss of skills. You will make sure that you will make sure that the balance in terms of ratio, you know, we adhere to what the objectives of cabinet and the country says, in making sure that there is representativity, there is transformation, and making sure that everything is concerned. So in future, without us making you and us asking you, it would be wise for you to, like, say, at the request of the chairperson of the committee, that we have to have an update on the workman's regiment. I don't know if the chairperson is working. Is happy about that with workman's regiment. Yeah. Is that the works regiment? What? Not workman's, okay. Okay, so it's a works regiment. Very gender sensitive. I think our defense force is growing in maturity in the night. So I also want to thank members who have, despite the little experience I have in chairing meetings, they've actually cooperated with me so well, and I'm sure that tomorrow they will do it when Mr. Ntuli will be chairing, or Mr. Diane. They will do it for everybody. Or Mr. Pepo or Mr. Dogo. One day we are going to chair. I will make that request for you, Mr. Dogo. Especially in your new haircut, you look so beautiful. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you. I think that lunch is ready outside.